Spectrum Internet has enough speed to handle all your needs. So you can work, game, and stream with speeds up to a gig. Plus, Spectrum's advanced Wi-Fi provides enhanced security for all your connected devices. Get Spectrum Internet with fast and reliable speeds, starting at just $29.99 a month with a 2-year price guarantee. Visit spectrum.com/internet for you for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Restrictions apply.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
Good morning, this is Theo Henderson from Weedian House. I'm here in San Jose, California. And the reason I'm here in San Jose, California is I was asked to come out here to investigate the unhoused, the houseless situation here. I went twice to San Luis Obispo to look at some situations there, and I have been covering Los Angeles, California. And it is my aim at Weedian House is to expand the viewpoint of what houselessness is all over the country, and all, in fact, and all over the world. So this is the first of many series that I'm going to be in other places to examine the realities of houselessness and where the cities and basically the world looks at the unhoused community and how they treat them. So behind me is a very tranquil, a very beautiful background. But if you take a step, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you will see behind me that there is a different reality. This is the reality that the rest of the world don't want you to see. This is where, and in such beauty, there's people trying to survive and make it from day to day. I've interviewed a few people here that's passed me, Daniel and John, and got their perspectives on how it is, how they lived out here, and how they came to be. And both of them have had the stories that they didn't magically appear out here. They had different circumstances, but the end result that they're out here. From criminalization, and they both have in common, as well as how they have discarded our houseless community, our vulnerable community, our disabled community, and unfortunately people that have been released from the penal system, and how they treat them as well. As a society, we have a lot of work to do and a lot to unpack in how we view people and its way in our viewpoint of always criminalizing. We've allowed our city council members to run roughshod without checks and balances and without accountability. And thus, they have become the criminals that they proclaim to be against. This is Theo Henderson from Weedian House, and I hope we learn and we again meet in the light of understanding today. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I'm here in San Jose, California, and I'm talking to one of our unhoused neighbors, and he's going to tell us a little bit of stories about his disability. So without further ado, let's get his name. What's your name, sir?
Bill Pritchard.
Bill Pritchard. So how long have you been out in the streets?
10 years.
10 years. What happened? You still was telling us about your disability. What happened there?
I have a broke neck and my back. It was hyperextended, so I messed up my disability. So then I had to wait to reapply, and now I'm ready for Social Security. Mm. So I applied for my Social Security at 62. I got no choice.
Right.
I could fight disability drag on it. So I'm going to get a little tiny chick to stay alive, but it's better than what I've been getting.
So what do you think, because, you know, what's this going on with the COVID-19? How are you handling it? What's going on? Did anybody tell you anything? Did they tell you to leave here or anything like that?
Yeah, we've been told to leave. We got a 24-hour, real recent here, just 24-hour, yeah.
Wow.
And, what I know about it is stay away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go anywhere. I don't go by people. I don't go to stores. I try not to. Mm-hmm. I have to eat, but it's better. Yeah.
So, how do you make it here? Do you guys, where's your bathrooms and showers? It's a little bit different than Los Angeles. I don't see like any porta potties and things like that.
No.
And so you just gotta go out to nature.
In Oregon, they give you a porta potty.
So you go to the restroom where? Here and where?
Bags.
Bags.
That way you can throw it away.
Oh, that way you can. Okay.
Otherwise, the snow catch up with you.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, you said you've been unhoused for 10 years. I've been for 7. What caused you to become out on the street?
I had an accident, and I messed my neck up real bad. And I've been unable to lift any amount of weight for any amount of time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't make an 8-hour shift.
Mm-hmm. So I was going to say, what were you doing? Were you working when you hurt your neck?
I was a handyman.
You was a handyman. Oh, okay. So, are you originally from San Jose?
I'm originally from Ohio.
Oh, really? What made you come out from here?
I'm from Ohio to California to Oregon, and then back to California.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
All a lot of years apart, though.
Well, usually people that ask this question, why did you want to go to a shelter?
I have PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know this until I had to hit one of them, but the chow halls and various other things put me into a bad space.
Mm-hmm.
And it was too much of a battle.
Mm-hmm.
It was too much. It's easier out here, even though I had a guy try to kill me out here with a rock one morning.
Oh, wow.
Woke me up and said, "Morning, sir, how are you?" And I said, "Fine, what do you need, youngster?" And he goes, "You're a good man," and he hits me in the head with a rock.
Oh my God!
He continues was to he on the?
Oh my goodness! Was this the one that you knew, or did you?
No, it was just that most of these people I meet them 2-3 times and they disappear.
My goodness, that's so sorry. I'm sorry to hear that.
So it does get robbed. It gets robbed. And in 10 years, there's been more than one.
Yeah.
But you can't stay in the shelter.
Yeah.
One thing I did like, that we had a hut program in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
I lived in a hut. I actually ran the camp for 2 years.
Right. Man.
Much better deal.
Oh, wow.
It's insulated.
Yeah. You know, they were talking about trying to do housing for unhoused people, like tiny homes and things like that. I said, that makes a lot more sense than just throwing them out and just letting them fin be freezing to death and things like that.
That's
what do you think? That's the thing,
too. We're working on it here. I mean, I've heard of it. Outreach hasn't been able to locate anything for me. Because I'm right there, I'm at my Social Security. I'm getting a check.
Good morning, sir. We're out on the street. We're here with our own podcast, and we just interviewed a friend of ours. Would you mind talking to us if you got time? I know you're a busy man, so. business appointments and, you're a popular guy. So my name is Theo. What's your name, sir?
Daniel.
So what do you think? How long have you been out here?
Papers. Almost 2 years.
Oh, 2 years. What made you get out here in this location?
I got out of Elmwood.
So. Got out of who?
Elmwood.
I don't know what that means.
It's your correctional facility.
Oh, because I'm from
jail.
Oh, I see. So was it easy to manage out here? Do they have any services to help people get on their feet when they leave to jail?
Sort of.
Okay. Yeah. So you came to this community, and how are you handling the COVID-19?
Yeah.
We were just talking about what measures do you take to keep yourself safe? Because like people think that unhoused people have COVID-19.
None. Mm-hmm. I really don't take any measures. Valley Med has tested us twice.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you have taken measures. Yeah. You made sure
they
you get tested.
Pick me up.
Yeah, really.
I said, "Well, what happened?" She goes, "I'll give you a motel room in a second. We'll give it to me then."
Yeah, yeah. They have Project Room Key. Yeah,
I'll be sick for a week if I get to lay down in bed.
What other predators? Because I've got the ones in
human predators.
Oh, okay. Because I know, like, where we're in Los Angeles, we have those too. So it's one of the things that's very scary. What are the things that, in the order for us to help you, would you be okay with? You like the tiny homes idea. Would you be okay with having a tiny home or Project Room Key or Home Key?
Yeah, if it helps others, yes.
No, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Daniel and John, this is Theo Henderson from Weedy and House. I thank you very much for your time. Do you have any other stuff?
I'd settle for a trailer park.
Oh, okay. We can do the trailer park. That would be a viable idea.
Give me a trailer.
Okay. And I hope we'll learn a little bit more what's going on here in San Jose. Lydia Ramos, one of the NIMBYs, claims that there are resources out there for the unhoused and for the unhoused to come to claim housing during COVID-19, that it didn't sit well with her. On other news, on December 1st, 2020, Councilmember Joe Biscano got his anti-unhoused ordinance sentiment passed, with 13 council members approving the resumption of care sweeps. As the earlier episode, I have pointed out how hostile Joe Biscano is toward the unhoused community in that area, how he is a former police officer, and he has a very negative and very hostile view of the unhoused community. On Tuesday, December 1st, 2020, 13 council members approved Joe Biscano's ordinance to resume care sweeps. In episode 36, we investigated Joe Biscano's district and his heavy-handed approach and anti-unhoused sentiment against the unhoused. We interviewed residents there as well as observers of how Joe Biscano really truly treats the unhoused community. And this is definitely a negative turn of events. Despite CDC guidelines, despite Eric Garcetti's ordinance of stay-at-home order, this is going to displace the many unhoused people and probably infect the entire area if they have other issues that with COVID-19 if they're trying to self-quarantine. Project Room Key estimates thousands will be thrown out of California hotels after the money runs out. Officials say that they must eject many of the hotels because they have accommodated more than 23,000 people. Tamokia Moss, who runs All Home, predicts that 10 to 20% will exit the program without anywhere to go. On top of that, on other news, there is an estimation that the rent moratorium will be lifted and faded away, and many and thousands, perhaps, that are currently living in homes that have COVID-19 will be plunged into the streets or living with family members or staying in their cars. That's an added health risk for the unhoused community on top of the CDC guidelines, as well as the hostile ordinances by Councilmember Joe Biscano and 13 council members approving the resumption of care sweeps. This will portend to be a very, very decimated population and an infected California that will increase COVID-19, not decrease it. This year in Aspen, Colorado, there will be no shelters for the unhoused in Aspen, Colorado. Aspen, Colorado's temperatures plunges into 32 degrees Fahrenheit, and there has a cold season, December to April. Where will the unhoused go there, and do they have 4118 there is the question. I'm Theo Henderson, and this is Unhoused News. This is Theo Henderson from Woody and House, and we are slumming. We're slumming with the Howells community and trying to get some insight on what's going on here. And this friendly dog, this is Henry. I may have to interview him first, or he might be trying to. Did he take the? I think he bit into the.
No, he didn't.
Oh, good. He bit into my lemon bar. So we're here, and we're going to be talking a little bit about the situation here in San Jose. And in the studios is Bertu, Gia, and David. And we, hopefully you guys can hear. I'll ask a few questions. And if you could speak up a little loud, that we can pick up what's going on. I'll put the mic in your direction. So what is your guys' perspective about the houseless situation here in San Jose?
I mean, definitely something that we've seen increase a lot since COVID has started. It's always been something that's been pretty intense here, but the last few months we've seen a huge increase in unhoused population.
Yeah, we've always had a lot of unhoused people in San Jose as long as I can remember. I was born and raised here, and it's just part of our community. But what I'm noticing now is a lot more people unhoused with animals on the street, and it's definitely increased since COVID started.
What about your David? What do you think?
The sad thing is that a lot of people were put in a position where they were no longer able to pay for their housing, and there has been an increase of people that didn't expect to be there, and you know. It's only been a few months, but we can already see the impact on the streets.
Yeah.
So what do you think is this, with COVID-19 coming to bear, and there's a lot of rent protections are going to fade away, what do you think their solution is going to be with the unhoused community now?
Well, that's a twofold question. So as far as the rent control or the rent protection, San Jose's been pretty good about rent forgiveness. And so our policy here is that nobody can become unhoused due to not paying rent, but they will be liable for unpaid rents once, whenever this is lifted. So that can be kind of scary for people.
Exactly, I was gonna say, because if for example, they're shutting down businesses, businesses at a crawl, and they're responsible and liable to a rent that's untold because they couldn't work due to the city and the country's orders. How are they going to pay this back rent? Because
they're not going to be able to. There is no way that people will be able to pay this forgiven rent, which isn't really forgiven.
No, it's not. It's a moratorium.
Yeah, so it is. It's a moratorium on evictions.
Mm-hmm.
And but people will be liable for that unpaid rent, and people aren't working, and so there's no way that they'll be able to pay it back.
Because mostly when I noticed, like, before I became unhoused, most people are trying to do the basic things. That means surviving, eating, learning, basically keeping alive, and then rent, and on top of on existing back rent, that's just going to be it's going to be unrealistic.
Unrealistic.
There's two ways to think about it, and you know, unfortunately, the people renting are not always people that have a job either,
mm-hmm.
right? It could be a grandmother, and that's what they're living off of, and mm-hmm. they've got a four flat, and they've got four renters in there, and that's what this grandmother lives off
mm-hmm.
of, and they're not receiving rent,
mm-hmm.
and they can't pay for their own food
mm-hmm.
as well. And so it's a really difficult problem in that respect, and I think, you know, there should be some way to negotiate with larger corporations that own large buildings to help those kinds of people, and hopefully that's what's going on. I don't have visibility to that, but it's not an easy problem to solve because, well,
I think one of the solutions that I've been saying, and people think I'm just, when I say it, it's so crazy. We have to face reality, because when in the stages of grief of like a life-changing illness or something, we're in denial. But we're past that now. We are in a COVID-19. Businesses, tenants, and people in general are in some facet of way are being affected by COVID-19. And so
you know, I know the Republicans are going to probably go into a rage, but we have to look at subsidies. We're going to have to say that businesses need subsidies. We're going to have to say that people that are on rent, they need subsidies, and people and unhoused people are going to need subsidies. We're going to have to do this. It's like it's uncomfortable people to say this. People don't want to face the reality because, in fact, you just keep blaming, and when you say that things are going to have to change, and then pushing it on people that are already burdened by financial debt or the wages.
Well, you can't expect people to stay home if you're not paying them. I mean, at a certain point, we need to pay people to stay home if
exactly.
we want to.
Exactly. But to mention that's going to send sounds... people who are going to be in a rage because they're going to be.
The reality is, I mean, we just had an election.
Right.
And on our ballot were certain measures that would have allotted money that could have helped homeless people. The voters in San Jose voted against all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They all lost.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that unhoused people lost. And that's the reality of the situation. The thing that we have in Silicon Valley is we have this dichotomy between ultra-wealthy people
mm-hmm.
and unhoused people.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have many unhoused people that have good jobs, that have cars, that have salaries and families
mm-hmm.
and animals.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have, you know, unhoused people that really have nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's this huge dichotomy, the spectrum between wealth in this valley that I've never seen anywhere else. It's crazy. On the same block, you will have a home worth $3 million and an unhoused person
mm-hmm.
on the same block.
And along those lines, one of the interesting things about what the government did do with the government assistance in the PPP loans and things like that was
mm-hmm.
they focused on the people that were losing their jobs
mm-hmm.
that were going to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
They obviously didn't do anything about the people that were already homeless.
Well, you know, and this is what we were talking about in Los Angeles. Here's the thing. For the months that were going on, the only thing that we got was $1,200. Now, the pandemic is raging on. People were still needing monies to be able to, and that money was either used to just to eat or just to survive and do, because Los Angeles is expensive. People don't realize it. It's not necessarily like the wealthy like Silicon Valley, but it's freaking expensive to be unhoused there because things are so high. So $1,200 for at least for over 6 months is not exactly the same thing. And then too, like the small businesses there are really, really suffering because they didn't have enough. They had a lottery for people, the lucky people, to get some money for them to help with their business, and it didn't really work. And some of the landlords wouldn't accept the monies that the city was giving them to try to throw them out. So I what are the bizarre things that I thought? It was like, you know what, if we just basically did subsidies for people to be able to, even the ones, the struggling businesses, the unhoused people, and everyone has the economy to continue to flow until, because they're going to spend the money, but it's just that it will stop this tsunami of things, that the rent could be taken care of, the businesses could be taken care of, and we won't have this tsunami of problems that's coming our way, and we're going to have to face it or just go under. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
I would say first, you know, this was supposed to be a temporary fix.
Yeah.
Right? This was supposed to be, hey, there's a pandemic out there, and we need to make sure that we could keep everything afloat while we get through this.
Yeah.
And then we were going to take care of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of money was spent, but nobody took care of the pandemic. And so here we are months later, and we probably have another year
mm-hmm.
or more of this. And everybody realizes we can't spend $3 trillion a month. That's a problem. I mean, unfortunately, it was a little bit of mismanagement in my view.
Mm.
But, you know, this was supposed to be keeping people off the street, not just giving them a Band-Aid so that 3 months later they would be on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's unfortunate.
Well, you know, one of the things that I think was part of the mismanagement, particularly I'm saying Los Angeles, is that it's strange about Los Angeles is that they had the tools in their toolbox to commandeer hotels and commandeer money to do rent forgiveness for people. they hemmed and hawed and denied and this and this and this. But for miraculously, when it's come to gentrifying some new areas that the Los Angeles is trying to do, they magically do eminent domain for poor people's homes and tell them they got to go. I mean, and so
well,
I'm like,
this
oh,
is,
that's crazy.
This is everywhere. I mean,
that happened in San Jose.
It happens everywhere.
Google bought buildings and
they evicted,
I think it was 157 people.
Oh my goodness.
But they weren't the owners of the buildings. Mm-hmm. They were the people renting.
The tenants. Yeah.
The tenants.
Some of them got a little money to be quiet and go away.
Yeah.
And they signed everything and they did that. This is a national issue. I mean, this is the American way is to just kind of brush people under the carpet. Nobody really cares about poor people. Mm-hmm. So it's happening everywhere.
Yeah, and houselessness in Silicon Valley is really, it's worse with COVID, but it is not a COVID-specific thing. I mean, mm-hmm. the rent here has always been astronomical, and it's significantly worse than it ever was. But this, I want to make sure people don't think this is a COVID problem.
COVID-specific problem.
No, it definitely
isn't. Houselessness existed way before COVID, I agree. But I do say that, because one of the things that I see the wave coming, particularly, like, for example, in Chinatown where I was, people had businesses there for like 40 or 50 years, and they're shutting down because there's no businesses. And then we have issues with these people that have lived in those buildings and their homes was up of their businesses. The landlord is coming calling. They can't stay there. And so, you know, and Los Angeles hasn't got to the point where Silicon Valley is, but it's got to a point where, you know, they're going to end up eventually on the street. And Los Angeles have an ability always to criminalize on how. Right now it's 4118. After that, they got something else. They got anything to criminalize unhoused people. You can look to Los Angeles. They got an ordinance for it. For sneezing, they got something for it. You know, I keep saying that eventually they're going to have an ordinance for it against the unhoused to float in the air because, you know, they ran them out the beaches. They ran them out the parks. They ran them out the sidewalks. And, you know, there's nowhere. It's just nowhere they're going to be. So, you know, it's like. This is coming. This wave is coming.
That happens here as well, and we find communities that get created in parks or certain areas in along the freeway.
Yeah.
And they'll sweep them, mm-hmm. and they'll move them. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we did, which I suggest you look into a little bit, mm-hmm. in San Jose, was the mayor came up with $17 million and built tiny houses. Okay. And so there is allotted some land, and a lot of people volunteered and helped and built $17 million worth of tiny houses that we're giving them to people.
Mm-hmm. Little tiny studios.
Yeah,
tiny
studios. They're okay, very cool. Cute, and you should probably check it out.
Oh, I would love to.
Yeah, so, but anyway, I mean, that was just a tiny solution to this huge problem. Obviously, you know, we need a lot more of these tiny houses.
Very much so.
One of the things I have mentioned before that I think is interesting is that we've had people come up with some decent solutions, like getting houses in neighborhoods where homeless people could live and use the space, mm-hmm. You know, laundry, showers, barbecues, just a nice huge. There was one in particular off of 13th Street, mm-hmm. that was a mansion that we had the funding for, mm-hmm. to put people in, mm-hmm. And the neighbors just all band together and shut it down. And the reality is, they're unhoused people on the street anyway, mm-hmm. so why not have them in a house? And mm-hmm. to me, it seems much better than, but for whatever reason, the neighbors just decided they didn't, so we don't want them here. We don't want them to come to our street.
Do you guys have, what is your guys' ordinances against unhoused people? Because, again, do you guys have ordinances?
No, I actually don't know.
That's what appeals, yeah, because I'm just curious because I don't hear the numbers brandied out. Like, for example, I don't know if you've seen, like, in Los Angeles, they got these big signs out on the poles and things that. They make it very clear that they don't want unhoused people. That's the difference with San Jose. You don't see those kind of things. It's like, it was really weird. It's very telling.
It's a part of our community and our lives.
Yeah.
And I think
it's a part of our culture going back decades. I mean,
we've always,
to be honest, there's always been a homeless community here. You know, going back to the hippies in the 60s and the 70s, they lived in communities in the parks. And, you know, things changed over the years. But, you know, there's certainly always been that kind of community here as a positive thing, not a negative thing. I think there's a different attitude here.
Definitely.
Maybe not a huge difference, but at least different than L.A.
Yeah, definitely.
How have you the homelessness here?
Yeah, I kind of can sense that a bit because when I walked down and I was looking, investigating, people were speaking to me, which is a bit unique in Los Angeles because it's true. I mean, I was very shocked, like, these people are actually speaking to me. Aww. Because, you know, L.A. has its own kind of synergy. They just, you know, they're very distrustful or very looking at you. You know, even you guys are well dressed, they're not going to necessarily say anything to you, you know, and if they see you in the park too long, then they're going to be dialing 311 or, you know, the police because they don't know you. And next thing you know, you're having to explain yourself. Well, I'm just here, just sitting in the park. Well, you can't be sitting in the park. You're homeless. Well, I'm not homeless. Well, let me see your ID, you know, that kind of thing. So there's been some interesting conversations I've had with people that sometimes visited some of the parks that I go to. That, you know, I was just sitting here and I didn't know it was so that they really want to make their imprint known that they are not welcoming to unhoused people. So it's a little bit different here. I yet to saw a police officer until earlier, maybe later in the evening. Maybe I saw like two police cars and it was at the police station. So I don't see that that obsessive driving around, you know, pulling up unhoused people like Los Angeles. I guarantee you, you'll see at least five cars, you know.
The police, generally, my experience with the police is they tend to leave unhoused people alone in San Jose, unless there's an active crime, and so it's not a crime to be unhoused.
So. And they truly embrace that, whereas like in Los Angeles, they just use that as doublespeak. You know, it's not a crime to be unhoused, but here's 311 if you see unhoused people in your neighborhood.
No. And obviously our perception of that might be, I mean, you might get a different story from someone who's actually experiencing it, but that's what I've noticed.
Oh,
but
I bet you will.
Yeah, I'm sure they have very different stories.
We're not living a day-to-day, so.
Exactly.
No,
exactly.
And I'm sure
but
you will.
But I, in LA, when I do outreach, though, police will be around me doing, you know, I've never been stopped here doing outreach.
You can definitely tell.
So that's something I can say firsthand.
Absolutely.
I do know
that's
that.
It. So you can definitely tell the difference. And it doesn't matter if you just looked the part or if you happen to have the temerity to help an unhoused person, you're going to be looked at. You know, and they're going to be pulling up on you and following you and that kind of thing. So
there's a lot more suspicion of not just unhoused people, but people who are working with unhoused people in LA that I haven't personally dealt with here. But.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Very, very, very polarized. And yet here we had a recent meeting and here is like one of the council members denying that the unhoused are criminalized. But, you know, that's, you know, Joe Boscano, yes, he lives in his own twilight zone. But so, you know, is there anything that do you think the city could do to create a better system for helping unhoused people that even though that they're not letting the police be the ones that are at the front of it, but what are this about the service providers that are helping unhoused people, you know, the shelters? And what the gentleman that I interviewed today said he was in a shelter, but he had PTSD. He didn't think it was, he couldn't handle it because, you know, shelters sometimes offer a little bit more stringency or a little more rote discipline, I won't say discipline, you know, kind of a little bit carceral.
Structure.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but a lot of people don't want to be in shelters for various reasons, and that's completely understandable and okay. And what was your question, though?
I was going to say, what do you think the city could do for solutions? Because if shelters don't work, why can't they just do maybe a hotel room key, or they could do a encampment to home kind of program?
I think a lot of that gets away from what the city can do and then gets more into what housed people can do because, you know, as she mentioned, and there have been a lot of kind of room key type projects and a lot of people aren't as receptive to that. And so I think it then gets on our shoulders as house people. If you're going to try to prevent these things in your community, then you can't expect, you know, the city to do things if you're going to try to shut it down.
Yes.
So right. It really just gets to kind of stopping NIMBYs from doing their thing.
Well, yeah. I think also, you know, to answer your question, we've got a little Discovery Channel going on here.
Yeah.
To answer your question, I think the cities are trying a lot of things. Yeah. I think they've got a lot of ideas. There's a lot of pilot programs.
But here in San Jose?
Yeah, yes. but mm-hmm. scaling those programs is the real difficulty, mm-hmm. right? It's one thing to set up a house for mm-hmm. for people
right.
in one community. There's another to handle the vast number of people that need it. Mm-hmm. And we need thousands of them, of right? You know, mm-hmm. we need to grow at 3 million new housing units just to keep the prices from housing and rent from going up.
Yes, correct.
And we're nowhere near that.
Huge mm-hmm. problem.
Right? And we needed to reallocate money.
Yeah. We did certain, need to reallocate money, yeah. and but, that didn't happen.
But also, I think, too, do you think the NIMBYism that drives it, too, because like you said, because I know in Los Angeles, they could do a lot of things, but they keep giving over, 54% of our budget is to the police. I mean, so, you know, you can't, when people keep complaining about trying to get it changed and then you keep throwing money at police officers and, you know, nobody else get any money, maybe, you know.
But that's because the voters believe that this problem should just disappear. Mm. And they believe that police can make it disappear. And so, I mean, that's the problem, mm-hmm. is that they don't understand where the money should be going. Mm-hmm. And it should be going to people. We have one hotel, actually, on the Alameda, where they do allow people to go in and shower when between, you know, room cleanings and things.
Right.
But that's just few and far between, and of course most people don't want to let their businesses, you know, be used by unhoused people.
Another thing too is, like, I was just interested, one of the gentlemen was telling me is that it's very difficult to leave your belongings because, like, today one of the residents was afraid that it's going to get thrown in the trash. So you don't want to take a chance and go to this thing and come back, and now you got to start off. Yeah. So
that's one of the biggest problems when you have all your possessions with you, is you don't have the flexibility to even go look for a job.
Yes.
Or to go do an interview, or to go take a shower, or to go do any of the things that you would want to do.
Mm-hmm.
We had an unhoused man living here with us for a while, and he was just excited because he could leave his stuff here.
Yeah.
And he left his stuff here and went and did some errands, and he was thrilled about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I gave him a tent,
mm-hmm.
and he took off, and he said that the police took his tent, I think it was 2 or 3 days later.
That's true. That
and that was sad.
Yeah. And it's so heartbreaking because, one, it's also, there are people that are unhoused that are work. For example, there's this gentleman that works a security guard at the park, and he's working, like, you know, doing his what he's trying to do to build up his money to get it, his stuff on his feet, and he comes back and all of his stuff is gone. So, you know, then it gets to the point where, what's the point of me working? Because every time I go and leave, because I got to go to work, I got to go to job.
Like a hamster.
Exactly.
Wheel.
You know, I'm going to keep losing my things. So, what's the point of it? And so that's another thing, you know, when you keep using police as the arm to criminalize people, they're not, you know, it's going to, people lose hope. People get frustrated, you know, and it's like, you know, it's only natural. I could tell you how many times I've lost my medicines because I went to go to a doctor's appointment, or I went to rush hustle to try to get on the housing list, or go see a caseworker, and I come back, all my stuff is gone, you know, or someone has stolen it, or, and then now I got to stress out because I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. Now I got to go save money that I thought I had, that I was going to put money on for this. Now I got to go back and go and do the whole damn thing over again. So it's like, it's very, very stressful to do that over a period of time, constantly. So I also had on my TikTok, it's a social media program I had the 60-gallon challenge. Special enforcement zones, 4118. These are measures that are used by the city and the police as NIMBYs to displace the unhoused community. And I've been trying to get house people to do it. And what the 60-bag gallon challenge is.
I'm afraid.
Yes, well, you need to.
I better not be pouring 60 gallons of water on
No. A little more exciting, a little more fun.
They use it at the opportune time of early morning and to displace the unhoused community under 10 minutes to place all their belongings in a garbage bag. You're not allowed to get anything else after that 10 minutes. Your mission at We The Unhoused, if you choose to accept it, is to use this 60-gallon bag. Put your belongings in, or your family member's belongings in 10 minutes, and they'll show this on TikTok as with the contents of it out of the bag.
So, for example, you guys have a lovely home.
I'm just going to go ahead and say they will not be. We will. There's no way.
No way. Well, okay. So, I'm going to say it. So, it's you bring a 60-gallon garbage bag. Mm-hmm. You get up at 5 in the morning. And you have 10 minutes to put all your belongings that you hold important into that bag. And then after the 10 minutes that you open up, you show the camera of the things that you were able to put in a bag for 10 minutes. After that, the rest of you have all your belongings goes into the trash. So that's that's what they do in Los Angeles. You have 10 minutes, here's your garbage bag, put all your belongings in there.
So sad.
And after that, and then you know, for example, we've got people got their medication, or their family's ashes, or like the woman had her dead infant ashes and things like that. She was waiting to, when she got it home, to put on a mantle and things. They throw it in the trash. You know, all those kind of things happens. And I want the more and more house community members to know that this is a reality that many are really oblivious to. So what you got?
I was oblivious to that, and that is devastating to me.
So I was trying to find the people to do the 60 bag gallon challenge just to see the trauma that goes with it. Because I don't know if someone runs up into you at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning, hey, bam, you know, let's get going, you know, hurry up, you're taking too long, da-da-da-da. You're panicking and you're remembering this. And once you're finished, then someone comes up and put a yellow tape past your stuff. And if you forget something and you want to beg to get them there, if you go over that tape, then you get arrested. So that's another thing too. Now you become charged with theft or interfering with the city employee that's taking your stuff, that's just literally your stuff, legal your stuff, while they put it in the trash can. So that's the 60-gallon bag challenge. So
I don't know if I'd be able to do that, but what I can do is
he could do it.
You know, find out whether or not that goes on here,
yeah,
and voice my opinion that it shouldn't go on here.
Absolutely. That's one of the that's an excellent way of looking at it and bringing attention to it to other people, because many people are not aware of that. And that's an excellent thing. That's one of the whole ideas of why I did it. I think, you know, and a lot of people have came to me and contacted me and said, wow, I didn't know this was going on. Oh my God, this is horrible. You know, so that's one of the things that I hope We The Unhoused continue to do, to open up and knock on the light of understanding to people. So you guys have been very gracious. Just to give a plug out, I love their pizza, the soup is to die for, and the lemon bar. I have to be low-key, been keeping my eye on two interval loafers, because I was trying to hustle to get those, because I love sweets. So I want to thank you guys for the graciousness of inviting me over for your lovely dinner. And I hope my rest of my guests, we again meet in the light of understanding. This is Theo Henderson from We Unhoused, and I have been here in San Jose investigating the unhoused and the homeless crisis here. And I have an excellent human being here that's talking with me, and he's going to introduce himself. He's a Salvadorian Muslim, and without further ado, let's get his story of what's going on with him.
Oh, hello, everybody. My name is Jorge Alberto Maravilla Vasquez. I was born and raised in El Salvador. I've been here in America for 38 years. I used to work as a car salesman. I did everything in the automotive industry. But due to alcohol addictions, I got 2 DUIs about 10 years ago, 2010, and then ended up homeless. Great experience because being with other people, you meet all kinds of people, all kinds of stories. My story is that I love God almost everything. I have found out that I don't need no material things to live with it, that I can have everything that I have, and I'll be unhappy. So when I didn't have anything, the God took whatever happens to my life that I, you know, due to my addiction of alcohol and drugs, due to the DUIs, I got in the streets. No job, you know, just lost everything, my savings. Obviously, my life was a wreck. I was out of control. And I was searching for a God, and I was met a God or this higher power that everybody talks that God is love, that God is everything. And I said, where are you? So I was angry at God because I didn't understand what is God. I think God is everything, and we all God. I mean, it's very, 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 that's why we sometimes we call it mystery when we get into the sacred books, like the Holy Torah, the first 5 books of the Bible. Okay, then we go back to the Holy Quran and then the Holy Bible and all those kind of merchants that all become one to the Creator. Okay, if so my story right now, going back to the housing, is that I got housing and then I got a case with my girlfriend, domestic violence, you know, and then after that I turned my life and I was unhoused for like 3 years, and then they pressed me to get a place. I got a place, but the place wasn't painted. So therefore, right there, I got some kind of skin disorder. I went to the hospital and they diagnosed me there with rush. They gave me the wrong medicine. I took it. 2 weeks ago, I go back to the hospital and then they find out that it was a case of the scabies. And then the treatment wasn't done right at the beginning. So I've been dealing with that for the last 36 months, but I'm almost there. Mm-hmm. So it's all good. It's been a great experience. I don't wish it up to my worst enemy. But going back to housing, I told them, look, since I know your construction and I know most of it, everything that you want to talk to me and speak about, okay, you by law need to pay in this place. Then you want to get rid of me after 3 years that we can get housing. That's not my problem. They wouldn't have affordable housing in San Jose. Mm-hmm. Okay? So $1,900 for maybe 750 square feet. It was really small. Mm-hmm. And old. And around. The plumbing didn't work. It was moldy. I took pain. I took pictures of all that. I reported to people they know. So I got all this witness and everything like that. So what they press on it is that I'm a green carder, like I mentioned to you guys before, I'm from El Salvador. So they start pressing for my green card, you know, and I said, look, I've been through 8 case managers, and they say, if I'm not traveling, and it's not an immigration attorney that has to put a hold in my immigration, in my green card, then I'm free to get all the benefits that I do. So, I mean, I don't know who you think you're dealing with, so we went back and forth. It was basically like a legal battle with everything female, you know what I mean? So, and it's all good. So I ended up being sick in the streets, and then where I was renting from, the guy there 4 years ago, he left me homeless. He took my van first, he moved it out of the place, he said that he needed a parking space to put his cars there. He didn't have a right to, I did. We rent for him too. I ran a group called Bienestar for an Alcoholic Anonymous, and we've been around here for 31 years, and I was there for 10. So right now, I'm just thank God for living with the pandemic. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you guys, and I'm probably getting in trouble for this. I probably get the CIA calling me or chasing me. It's a plandemia, because the people that really go into the internet just to investigate. And I want to thank you, brothers and brothers, for coming in here to put a voice to the homeless. We, the homeless here in San Jose, need a voice. I want to be that voice. I want to be the voice because, you know, there's nothing you can tell me. I had lived in the creek, I had lived underneath the bridges, I had lived all over, I had lived in little churches, what we call it, where the lady then they don't, they assert themselves. There's not the people that want to assert themselves. The lady got even the toilet paper in the garage, and she got embezzled. Over there because she was crooked. The lady was running the place. Okay, the other guy.
That was the helping the unhoused.
She was the director of the shelter.
And she was taking these supplies for her own personal gain.
Yeah, all of it. And then all the money and everything, all the help that went there, the clothes and everything, they were stealing it.
And so, now, so the thing that helps the unhoused people when they say that shelters and that this place is shut down because the staff was crooked.
Yeah, big time. And you know, it's on the paper, you can research that. I did go back a little church about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And then see, I can speak to about that. So now we're talking about the pandemic. And now they want to get the rules roll back up, and now the Democrats have won the presidency. So far, it's argumentative, but I told Trump, you know, I'm a Trump supporter just because he's a good manager, just so he is. It's into the interest of everybody.
Mm.
Okay?
Interesting.
But yeah, I don't want to be political about it. It's just the way that I look at how he said, as an American, I consider myself an American living here 38 years. Mm. I pay my taxes. I'm grandpa here. I got three beautiful children. I have Jennifer Rose, my oldest. She cuts hair. She lives in Palm Springs. My boy, he has his own company in Del Rio, Texas. And my daughter, is in San Antonio, Texas. So, all this coming around right now, downtown city street teams is trying to put a voice into the homeless because there's $11 million for the county. Stanley Cardo has all the stuff that we're gonna do right now. There's a flyer going on that I might have for you guys that you probably need to know because it has something to do with the homeless. The mayor has at 1618, there's a deal going, a parade, and it has a deal where they have like a guy living in a, like in a creek, okay? And we're gonna try to promote more into getting affordable housing. They're building, and there's some other things we'll find out where they're building. There's a building here for the homeless, that they're gonna build so many people. So all that information, it is right here. If you go to City Hall, and they give you all the information for what we wanna do. But if you wanna come in here, I'm the one that can tell you another thing too. Thank God you got Carlos here, you got two voices. There's God working there. We can, the most thing we can tell, then I can tell my people on my channel. When I get there, I can tell to my people, and people will know this in El Salvador, and people in Maryland, and people in New York. We are going to put a voice in everybody and just let them know that we are not praying. If we're not submitting to God, if we just want and cry, but we're not saying, why is God doing something in this pandemic? This is God. That's not God. God said that there's nothing for what he's going to send when the real time of he come, you know?
Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us. We're going to interview a few other people.
Love
here
it.
As well.
Thank and you very much and welcome, brothers.
Thank you. We may come back. And
may
we
the peace of God be upon you.
You too. And this is Theo Henderson from Woody and House. We're going to continue the mill about, and I hope we again meet in the light of understanding. Theo Henderson from Weedy and House, and I'm here in San Jose, California, and I have met a very talented young man here. His name is Raheem, and he's going to tell me a little bit about his story. Just tell us how you got here. You was living with someone, right? And what happened?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, go.
So I was a resident in the community. I lived here for about 39 years. And I don't know, like I went to a local shelter and you know, it was ran by, you know, a friend of mine. I thought it was a friend of mine, you know. And I don't know, I've known him like 10 years plus, and all of a sudden, you know, I'm exited, you know, banished from the opportunity and being able to utilize the services or any of that shit, you know, and then I'm just like banished away from the place, you know, so I'm like, well, I gotta find a place to go. And that's what I found, you know, I felt like, well, as a native, you know, indigenous person, you know, in my bloodline, like, I'm just gonna look into my inherent survival ability, you know?
I was gonna tell you too, cause like, for example, when you said like, he threw you out during COVID time, didn't he?
Yeah, that's, you know, I was kind of shocked, you know, to be honest. You know, I've seen a lot of, wickedness going on since all this had started. Call it the plandemic, you know. But you know, a lot of people that I've known and I've trust, you know, they've given me the cold shoulder, and they really, a lot of people's colors, you know, are showing.
Yeah,
straight up. You know, there's a lady being out here. I built up a little perimeter with my tent.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to sick her dog on me, talking about she's spiritual and this is sacred land, and it's like, but don't you know that the Hopi, you know, they say the world is Koyaanisqatsi, meaning a world that has fallen out of balance because people have forgotten how to share.
That is quite profound. The Hopi does have a saying of that. One of the things that struck me is, too, you guys are social distancing without the city telling you to. It's very spacious here. Your spots are very far away. Why here instead of, like, in the city? Why did you guys choose here?
It looks like an area, you know, it hasn't been disturbed. I'm surprised it hasn't been disturbed, mm-hmm. you know, because usually they try to regulate, you know, push people out or whatever, and calm the land or whatever they do, you know, whatever type of strategy they use. I don't understand why, being a resident in the community, I don't feel like I just want to leave yet, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not necessarily a settler, but, you know, I'm out here sustaining as a nomad, mm-hmm. you know. But being out here, I like this location because you actually have room where you can pitch a fire, you know what I mean? It ain't going to cause no harm. You know, and it ain't really bothering nobody. You know, everyone's got their own little area. And with the social distancing thing, you know, it works out.
So. Yeah. Where do you guys go to use the restrooms? Do you have a restroom or showers or tents, porta potties? How do you guys take care of that?
There's a service out here. It's called Dignity on Wheels. And they have locations that you can meet them at. You know, but you gotta be disciplined, you know, so you gotta have some type of discipline. You can't be no lazy motherfucker running around eating Kentucky Fried Chicken all day, you know what I'm saying? Like, No, but real though, you gotta get up at a certain time, you gotta get there and meet them. You know, they offer laundry as well. And also, it's a good practical service for the community.
You also mentioned, too, I wanna highlight two things. One, that you keep yourself in shape. You say you run and you keep it up. And the second thing is that you are a musician. So what is your skill sets, and do you have any music, or do you play instruments, or what's your talent you have?
Well, yeah, for sure, I'm a local musician. I've been making music well over 19 to 19 years. I don't know, I like a lyricist, vocalist, you know, guitarist, just kind of well-rounded, you know. I learned how to play the bass and the drums, you know, just try to get into certain instruments, you know, and guitar was one of my favorite, but I usually compose the music, you know, that it based off of, you know, guitar chords, and, you know, if I hear a rhythm or whatever, I can match it up, and then if I hear it, I like it, I'll make a beat, you know. Just kind of mix it up. You know what it's like to be a musician, like a DJ. So yeah, you know, I just stick with my craft. And being out here, I gotta keep my mind busy, you know, keep my body, you know, healthy. So I like to jog, I like to train, you know, I like to stay militant. Because, you know, I ain't trying to be a sitting duck out here, not at all. You know, they try to move in or whatever and then try to just gentrify the whole thing again, you know what I mean? Then it goes our civil rights, our equal rights, you know? And that's just not something, you know, I'm gonna take lightly.
That I can understand. I can say, would you be open to, like, for example, if they offered you a hotel room or a project home key between the shelter, because obviously shelters is not hitting it. So what about that? Would you be okay having your own spot?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I feel like I'm self-sustained, self-reliant, mm-hmm. self-confident, you know, and if I just had the opportunity to open door, you know, I'd probably utilize, you know, whatever services were provided, you know, and not take it for granted, because, I mean, first and foremost, I got to give thanks to the Most High, because mm-hmm. I'm out here unscathed, you know, I ain't affected by this pandemic, you know, and I just feel like my sustainability may not be like others, mm-hmm. you know. I maintain my position because of my diet, the way I live my life, you know, so it doesn't need to be infringed upon, mm-hmm. you know. So you can keep your vaccine and all your bullshit, you know, and I'll be fine as an individual. You know, you just have to find other individuals, you know what I'm saying, who are able to sustain and able to maintain. Mm-hmm.
You've given us a lot of insight to it. It's like I appreciate you taking the time to come out and be gracious enough. A lot of the unhoused do the same thing. I find is always they're always the least pleasant, and they have to be the most sane, considering of how people think of we are the most insane. But then we are mostly sane and more giving and much more kinder people than I could say people sometimes that are unhoused. That's not to say all unhoused people are not, but there is this myth that the people that are on the street we're just crazy or ready to attack at a moment's notice, these kind of things. But this is not true. I'm like, I've gone through several different places and they've been polite to me, been kind, they talked to me, and there's a truck coming up here and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
here.
So it's all right, we can continue.
I thought you might have known them. So here's the thing for San Jose. How do you guys survive in the rain? Because it rained yesterday. What happened here?
Due to the rain and the wind, kind of picked up, you know, just kind of blew around a lot of debris. Mm-hmm. I just kind of raked it up and just kind of swept it up, kind of kept my area. Mm-hmm. You know, I got a tarp on my tent, so, you know, the rain doesn't really affect me much, other than trying to keep dirt out of my tent. Mm-hmm. Just trying to stay clean, that's really it. But, I feel like being in this situation, just got to consider certain things, stay fed, stay clean. You know, clean clothes, you know, utilize your ability, your inherent capability. The other day I just used a tarp, you know, and a bungee cord, and mm-hmm. I set it up in such a way where I had heated up my own water, I took my own shower, you know, so.
Oh, okay. That's definitely resourceful.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? don't lose touch of your ability to be resourceful, mm-hmm. you know, especially in times like this.
I heard that they allowed you guys to have the water on. Is that true? Because I'm noticing that some spots they use the water here to be able to use. And obviously the city right now is not trying to do a big gentrification move over here because of pandemic. That's really just like nobody's really going to be buying. And then, you know, that's just crazy. So, you know, that's not the plan. So apparently that's one of the things. The second thing I'm also noticing, again, the spaciousness of this. What if you guys created a community out here? Would you want to have a community out here, or would you want it to be back and regular in this society?
Absolutely. Like, I feel as it sustains itself and we don't have problems out here, you know, it ain't too problematic and mm-hmm. people, you know, but then you got whatever, you know, whatever kind of energy that comes into the area. Mm-hmm. I feel like the people who are here now, mm-hmm. you know, very peaceful and some are crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out here on drugs. So mm-hmm. that's one thing to consider. You know, drugs changes a person's mind state, so they're liable to do anything, whatever. But, you know, if you have your inherent skills to survive, you know how to defend yourself and protect yourself, you should be all right.
Yeah, and substance usage is an issue where some people use it to cope with the stress of living out here too. So we have to understand that. The second thing we also have to understand is that even them, they need help. They need a place where they can be able to get well. You can get well out here, but you're still on the street. So why not take care of two birds with one stone? Get them well, get them a pit here. And then it's like, for example, there are people that are disabled. They just, you know, they keep as healthy as they possibly can, but they cannot, it just won't be able to make the necessary things like some able body or some very virile people can do. So That's just all types of realities that I'm starting to see that goes on out here. And one of the things I love to say is that you never know what talents that many of these people out here have. You know, they may not be able to be a singer, but they may be able to cook. Like this, I just saw a woman come over here with a meal to feed somebody. You know, they might be able to, a handyman, like the gentleman that we just re-interviewed. So there are several different ways people have contribute and can and have value. They find things to find harmony back into who their inner selves. And I think sometimes capitalism steals from that and robs and takes that soul that we believe that we should be all, everybody out on the street should just get a job. That's not the issue here. There's a lot of things that's going behind the scenes that we need to delve deeper in. And with that said, I really thank you for your time, Raheem. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy and Hound. Is it okay if we come back and visit you sometime?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are welcome.
Thank you very much. We may bring some food too, because I'm a foodie, so.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. So this is Theo Henderson from Weedy and Hound. I thank you all for listening, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. Theo Henderson from Weedy and Hound. We're currently here in San Jose, California, and I've been covering the beat on Los Angeles of the houseless or the unhoused community there, but now I'm looking at the unhoused community here. We have a gentleman here in the studios that's got been, I believe you said you've been out here for 32 years?
Yeah, I'm Morgan David Sandoval Sr., and I'm 64 years old, and after my divorce, I went to the streets and then I never went away, and I was there for 32 years until my worker, I got a county worker, and then finally it took him a year and a little bit over a year to convince me to come to an apartment right down there. It's called the Villa at the Park. Mm-hmm. And there's a brand new place and everything like that. And so I'm giving it a go, and I signed a 3-year stitch, so I'm in it for the 3 years.
So how did you come out here for 32 years? You just say you was in incarcerated or?
No, I got divorced, and I had a good job and everything with HP and all that. So I worked on it. Told my wife, okay, you just keep the apartment and the house. I mean the house, and I'll go, you know, find some work. And so I did that, and it went along like that. And then I got so used to being on the streets, and you know, like I said, I'm not afraid of anybody, and you know, I mean, they're big, they can beat me up, they beat me up a hell of a lot of time. I almost got killed by an Aryan brother when I was living with my daughter, Modesto.
Wow.
Yeah.
What happened there? How did that
I was picking up recyclables, that's my thing, because I got to keep Mother Nature, you know, because Mother Nature is, she's running out of everything, man, we're sucking her dry. And so anyway, I was getting all this recyclables, and I can hear it, it's a small little parking lot. And it's like, I can hear rum, the car. And I go, that doesn't seem right. And I looked over, and this guy's behind the steering wheel like that. And giving me the filthiest looks, I'm going, oh, shit. And so he took off, and the next thing I know, I just dropped him, and I jumped up as high as I could. And I hit the top of the hood, and then slammed into his windshield, busted that. And then he slammed on the brakes, and the witnesses said that I flew maybe about 20 to 25 feet in the air. Came down, broken arm, fractured my leg, all kinds of cuts and bruises and everything like that. And then this gentleman was in a three-piece suit, and he goes, I own these buildings, so don't worry about it. Those two young men right there are taking care of that guy. Mm-hmm. And he goes, and they're beating the hell out of him. Mm-hmm. You know. And he goes, I called the cops and all that, and the cops came, and the ambulance and all that shit, and they took me. And I go, well, this is my daughter's number, and I'm going to pass out. And I passed out. Mm-hmm. The next thing I know, I was in surgery.
And I can hear my daughter screaming at, where's my dad? Where is my dad? And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, but that was that. And then, but yeah, living in the streets is, they gave me a chance. And I said, nah, I had enough money. I said, nah, fuck it, I ain't gonna go live. Nah. So I started living in the street. I was on 10th Street, and I had one whole block. Mm-hmm. It was my own. I had all, I'm a pack rat. So I had collected all, and selling stuff, you know, and so, the police said, oh, come on, and then the county, and then the county got into it, and then that's why I'm here. And it's a decision that I don't think I'm going to regret. And then once my contract ends after 3 years,
yeah,
if I decided to stay here still, I think I might just do it, you know, because okay. I'm okay. 64 years old, and I've had enough bullshit on the streets and everything like that, you know, because and like I said, I've gotten beat up so many times, and I got so many scars, and this is my latest scar. Look at that, man.
Oh, how did that happen?
Three Mexican nationals. They apparently didn't like the way I was dressed and the way I, you know, because, you know, I don't, whatever. Mm-hmm. I know karate, but I'm equivalent to a black belt, because mm-hmm. my sensei said, if I give you a degree, every place you go, you're gonna have to report to the police. Mm-hmm. I go, oh. Well, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Missed the last week of mm-hmm. the class. I go, okay. So I did. I went back to him and everything. I had him and his wife. They're going to get married. And he's from Hawaii. And so anyway, that was that. And then, I got in here. And it's been working out. I mean, the first year, first 6 months and everything, it was kind of rough because I wasn't used to house rules and all that kind of shit. You know, I mean, prison rule, or the county. I was in prison for a little bit less than 6 months. You know that California has a verbal assault law?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
Well, why was you in the jail for 6 months?
I was going to go to prison. I was in prison for 6 months because California has a verbal assault law.
What does that mean?
If you cuss out somebody and they hear it and somebody records it, mm-hmm. they can use that against you. And I was at a BTA stop. And this big guy.
What's a BTA? I don't know.
Valley Transit Authority.
Okay.
Yeah, the buses. The buses.
Oh, okay, okay.
And so I was waiting for my turn on the bus, and this big old guy, I mean, made that guy look small. Mm-hmm. That's how big this guy is, right?
Okay.
And he pushes me out of the way and gets in front. And I go, hey, man, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then it's, you know, yeah, okay. So I walked away. And about a week later, I'm doing my normal bus thing. And a car comes up, and I could tell it's a cop car, it's a detective car. Mm-hmm. And two guys get out, and I go, oh yeah, and they go, what's your name? I told him my name, Morgan Davis Sandoval Sr. He goes, okay, and blah, 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 and they show me pictures. He goes, you know this person? No. You know this person? Yeah, that's a big moose that pushed me out of the way and got in front of at the bus over there in Morgan Hill. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, okay, so you do. I recognize him, I don't know him. Mm-hmm. He goes, oh, okay, well, you're under arrest. I go, what? You're under arrest for verbal assault and harassment. And I go, for what? He goes, well, that big old moose, as you call him, is only 16 years old. I go, oh my God. And that was the bottom, and I go, yeah, let's mm-hmm. take me in, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And in court, I was in front of the judge and the mama. The kid was so afraid of me, he wouldn't even go to the court. With all those cops, sheriffs, deputies, and sanity police, he was so scared of me. And I felt like crap. Mm-hmm. And so I told the judge, and he goes, you, what's your plea? I go, I'm pleading something, but can I see something to the mother, please? And so I told the mother, I'm so very sorry that I did that. I didn't realize that your son was only 16 years old, and blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, thank you very much. I go, okay. And then, so I turn around, I go, all right, judge, do what you're gonna do. He goes, all right, well, I was gonna, you could get 6 years. Mm. I go, 6 years? He goes, yeah, but I'm gonna be nice, I'm gonna give you 3. I go, okay.
Oh my God.
Okay.
That's very nice of
you. Yeah, very nice. And see, I'm a northerner, and they sent me to a Southern California prison. Mm. They wanted me dead. Mm-hmm. And so, about a few months later, my PO shows up, and I go, now what are they gonna do to me? Mm-hmm. And he goes, Sandoval, guess what? I go, I don't know, what? Mm-hmm. He goes, you're gonna be released next week. I go, what? He goes, yeah, I got your release. How did you do that? Well, because you didn't hit nobody, you didn't hurt nobody, and it was just verbal assault. And so far you've been good on terms with the officers and the parole and the jail, everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And so that, and what's his name? got the mayor, I mean the governor, he said, well, they're overcrowded because they're getting prisoners from out of state because California makes more money off the prisoners.
Okay.
Oh yeah, they make a fortune. That's why we got more prisons here in Santa Clara County than anywhere else.
That explains the criminalization of unhoused people.
You got that right. I mean, hey, yeah. You know, talk about that, you know. I mean, and this county literally makes a fortune off mm-hmm. of the, off of that. And so, and then the upper state makes mm-hmm. a fortune off the prisons. Okay. So we get prisoners all the way from New York. Mm-hmm. You know, and they send them over here mm-hmm. because we got more room. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, and the, I guess the, you know, logistics of it, though, where you can't send murderers or that kind of people in there like that. Mm-hmm. And so that was that. And so I said, okay. And I go, wow. I go, cool. And so I watched my P's and Q's and my probation and everything, it all went by and everything. And I was a free man. And since then, mm-hmm. I haven't gotten in trouble. I haven't did anything. I've been to county. I haven't been to jail or nothing. So. Mm-hmm. I made a promise with God that, you know, I was going to behave myself. Mm-hmm. But other than that, that's about it. I mean, you know, this park right here, this used to be a heavy-duty mm-hmm. homeless park or whatever like that. But the city has been working to get everybody out, and so it's a normal park mm-hmm. so that people can bring their kids or, mm-hmm. you know, or you can spend a day looking at, you know, at gophers mm-hmm. or the squirrels running around. And then plus, too, we get a bunch of the ducks, mm-hmm. the geese. They love this park. Because the worms are here, they got all, you know, they work, you can see, there they are right there.
Yeah, yeah.
They work one side of the park, and they work all the way, and then they turn, and then they come back, and then they go work there. They got it like an organized thing, you know. You know, for supposed to be dumb animals, they're pretty damn smart. Mm-hmm. You know, other than that, that's about it, and everything like that. So I was just going to go and trade my pennies in and see if I can make a beer money.
So you paint, huh?
Huh?
You paint?
No. I was a material handler in the electronics business, and I worked on cars. And I'm the youngest in the International Show Car Association. Mm-hmm. In 1976, I was the youngest winner of that show car organization mm-hmm. In the San Jose Autorama. Mm-hmm. And I'm still in the record books. Mm-hmm. I was only 17 at the time. And I clocked the already, buddy. Best custom interior, best custom paint, most popular car by Spectator Report, best car by you know, everybody else. And so, and my record's still standing there, and I'm so proud of that. Other than that, that's about it, you know. And I got a son and a daughter. Daughter's a head nurse for a retirement home. My son's an ex-Marine, and he works for the Veterans Administration, making sure the veterans get what is owed to them, not what was given to them, because mm-hmm. what's owed to them and what's given to them is too. I mean, my God, my son was telling me some ugly stories. I go, no wonder. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of vets are out here on the street because they don't get what they're supposed to get.
That's horrible.
Yeah, so he's taking care of that section, and so that's about it. And me, I'm too old to get a job, because everybody says it, but I can kick ass and fight, but no, I can't work. Get me.
Well, thank you very much for your time. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy and House. We're going to come back to San Jose again. Hopefully, we can check up on you.
Oh, yeah. Hey, just go to the Villa of the Park. Yes. You'll find me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thank you all for listening, and hopefully, we'll meet again in the light of understanding. This episode of Weedy and House in San Jose, California has offered some similarities and has offered some differences. The most similarities is one on how people would try to adapt in any circumstance, no matter where you're in Los Angeles or San Jose. The differences is some of the nuances there. In San Jose, they have worked successfully in trying to make unhoused people disappear. Los Angeles, California is too densely populated, and it's going to be impossible to force people to disappear. San Jose's wealth has made them have a sense of fake concern, and long as they're not seen in the downtown proper, then they can try to coexist to a certain degree. The first guest I interviewed today stated that they had a 24-hour notice during COVID to extricate it. So tomorrow he may not be at the same location. So that is something that they have in common in San Jose and Los Angeles. So unhoused people also have a sense of kindness that seems to be transmitting from Los Angeles to San Jose. And there's some people here that want to do something and want to make some changes. That's something that's also here in San Jose. So in the long and short of it is that houselessness is here to stay in some respect, is how we treat our unhoused neighbors. This is Theo Henderson from Weedy Unhoused. I thank you all for listening, and I hope we again meet in the light of understanding.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn, alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.